Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/Nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Psalm 48, Tehillah Mem Chet. In the last lesson, I mentioned that Psalms 46 and 47 were certainly a set. The first deals with the fearful times of the pre-Messianic War, and the second deals with universal post-war acceptance of God as King of the entire world. It is possible that our Psalm 48 continues this set, describing the kings of the nations coming to Jerusalem to appreciate its beauty and its virtues, which was called for in the end of Psalm 47. Or it might be going back to describe how Jerusalem will look to its attackers, the kings, these enemies, in that pre-Messianic war, as described in Psalm 46. This is certainly the opinion of Rabbi David Kimchi, who says, Gam ze hamizmor limot ha-Mashiach. This psalm is also for the days of the Mashiach, though he doesn't pin down exactly which one. On the other hand, it may just be a hymn to the holy city of Jerusalem, which is appropriate for past, future, and thank God appropriate for Jerusalem in the year 2008 as well. Shir Mizmor Livnei Koach, a psalm of singing. Perhaps this one was more voice related than other psalms by the Korachites. Gadol Adonai Umahulal Meod Beir Eloheinu Har Kadsho. Great is the Lord, much praised in the city of our God on his holy mountain. As I translated it, the psalm zooms us in from the city of Jerusalem as a whole to a close-up of the Temple Mount itself, Har Kodesh. However, it may mean that the city of God in its entirety is the holy mountain, that is not just one mountain, but the entirety of Jerusalem is holy, and the entirety of it is going to be praised. As I mentioned in the previous psalm, the use of both primary names of God, which is seen here, Elohim and Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, the covenantal name of God and the universal name of God, may be indicative of the messianic promise that God and his name will be one in those days. Yifei Nov Misos Kol Ha'aretz Har Tzion Yarkatei Tzafon Kiryat Melech Rav. City or heights of beauty, a joy for the entire world, Mount Zion, the northern extents, the city of the great God. It's obvious that my English translation, and perhaps any English translation, loses the poetic beauty of the Hebrew original. Har Tzion, Yarkatei Tzafon, very beautiful poetry which doesn't really translate into the English. Tzafon is a mountain located on the Syrian border with the Mediterranean Sea, and the Phoenicians considered Mount Tzafon a seat of their gods. But it is doubtful that David would be comparing Mount Zion with this ancient seat of idol worship. Most commentaries assert that Tzafon here means the Temple Mount, since Jerusalem is in the northern part of the Judean mountains, and in fact the northern part of the tribal lands of Judah in general. Elohim bi'armanoteha noda limisgav. God through her castles, i.e. by means of Jerusalem's citadels, God is known as a high place. In Psalm 46, Memvav, part of this messianic set, we saw that God is described as a misgav, a matzada-like or Jerusalem-like high place for refuge. The quote there was, Adonai Tzvot Imanu misgav lanu. He is a high place for us. And now we get to the kings of the world who have shown up to Jerusalem. Kihine hamalachim no'adu aviru yachdav. Indeed, behold, the kings have gathered together, crossed over together. So first they come for war, then they come to affirm God as high king. Although here, I think we are still in the war phase. Hema ra'u kein tamahu nivhalu nechpazu. Again, the Hebrew poetry is beautiful, and the English can't really do it justice. They saw, and so they were shocked. They became terrified and panicked. This may be recalling the war described two Psalms ago, or perhaps they are simply awestruck by the awesomeness of God. As I said, this might be describing the war immediately before the Messianic times. It may be describing the acceptance of God after the Messianic times. Still, I think it's more of a description of the war in pre-Messianic times. Ra'ada achazatam sham chil kayolida. There they were overcome with quaking, like the contractions of a woman giving birth. And I know that's just a just a terrible translation, but I'll go with that for Chil Kayole Dan. I say maybe my terrible translation will inspire you to go back to the Hebrew original. Beruach Kadim Tishaber Oniot Tarshish. The ships of Tarshish are destroyed by an eastern wind. So there's a lot to be said about these ships of Tarshish, and a lot of commentary ink has been spilled on identifying the kings that might sail from Tarshish. Tarshish is almost surely the city of Tarsus, a major port city whose quay spills out into the Mediterranean in Asia Minor, which is now modern-day Turkey. But I think that Nachum Sarna of blessed memory, author of a great many books on biblical commentary, including one on the Book of Psalms, which is well worth reading, is correct in asserting, and I'm paraphrasing him here, that Tarsus is not the location of the ship, but it's a class of ship. And today we might say something like a Nimitz class aircraft carrier. That doesn't mean that it's actually the Nimitz, but it's the class of Nimitz, which would indicate that it's a nuclear-powered supercarrier. So too, Tarsus, which is a well-known seaport and probably a great supplier of warships, once controlled, by the way, by the Assyrian forces, is probably what is being spoken of here. It's not the ships of Tarshish, but it's the ships of the class of Tarshish. And in fact, that's why Nachum Sarna wants to date this psalm to Assyria's attacks in Israel, because that's when they might have been able to pick up these Tarshish class ships. And this may be so, but remember, with prophecy or inspired literature, Tehillim, it's hard to say what is history and what are the visions of some future history. Either way, don't worry about the fact that Jerusalem is landbound and how did the Tarshish ships get there. Obviously, these Tarshish ships were destroyed in the Mediterranean while they were trying to support forces or logistics for an assault on Jerusalem. Kasher, Shamanu, Kain Ra'inu, Be'ir Adonai Tzvaot, Be'ir Eloheinu, Elohim Yechoneneha Ad Olam Sela. Just as we heard, so we saw in the city of the Lord of hosts, the city of our God, God will keep it firm forever, Sela. So I hate to beat a dead horse here, but note the use of the messianic Lord of hosts, Hashem Tzvaot, as we saw in Psalm 46. And lest you think that I'm making mountains out of molehills, in fact, God is called Lord of Hosts, Hashem Tzvaot, only 7 times in all of Psalms. 3 times is in our set in Psalms 46, 47, 48, and 3 times are in a single Psalm 84, which refers to Mashiach explicitly. So, again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but there's no question that the use of Hashem Tzvaot specifically puts us in messianic meaning. But the time frame of this verse is not very clear, because the people seem to be talking. The people are saying, just as we heard would happen, so we saw it happen in Jerusalem, as if the war is already over. But again, as I've said before, past tense in Psalms can easily be the confidence tense. That is, it hasn't happened yet, but there's a great confidence that that Jerusalem will survive, Jerusalem's enemies will be destroyed, and God will make sure it is firm forever. And now, hidden in the next 3 verses are the attributes of God and the attributes of Jerusalem and the attributes of any just and deserving messianic king. In the next verse, we have God's loving kindness, his chesed. Following that, in the pasuk afterwards, is his tzedek, his righteousness. Following after that is his justice, is his mishpat. So we have a trio of chesed, then tzedek, and mishpat. Now, it's easy to miss these kind of poetic jewels. But once you catch it, it shows really how beautifully our psalm is constructed in specific and psalms in general. How much beautiful stuff is really wrapped inside and woven through things which are really very difficult to see. But once you come across them, they really sparkle. Diminu Elohim chasdecha bekerev heichalecha. Diminu is a tough word. It either comes from the root of silence or to be similar or duplicate. Rashi translates, we were silent, i.e. in prayer for your kindness to save us. Ibn Ezra translates that in our hearts we imagined or we conceptualized, we made a copy of, so to speak, your loving kindness, which is to be found inside your palace. Or perhaps it means we did this by praying or conceptualizing in your temple when war was upon us. Kishimcha Elohim kein tilatcha al katzvei eretz. Tzedek mala'a yiminecha. Just as your name does, O God, so your praise reaches until the ends of the earth. That is, your name and praise of your name is not only here in Jerusalem, but it is everywhere. And what is that praise? The praise is that your right hand is filled with righteousness, with tzedek. Now, your right hand may be referring to the Messianic King, or it may be a metaphoric statement about the power of God's outstretched arm. But either way, bringing the praise in a bit closer, not to the ends of the earth, but in Jerusalem as well, Yismach Har Tzion, Tagelana Binot Yehuda, Leman Mishpatecha. Let the mountains of Zion rejoice. Let the daughters of Judah make merry because of your justice, the final of the third words, Mishpatecha. The reference to Benot Yehuda is more narrow than one would expect for a universal or messianic psalm. That is, why should one be referring to just the tribe of Judah in the Mashiach? It should be all of Israel. And that's why Professor Sarna, who I mentioned before, sees this as a historical psalm, referring specifically to a serious march in Jerusalem when there was no northern Israel, because northern Israel had been exiled some years before. Of course, Isaiah saw that march on his land as, in fact, a pre-messianic event. He thought that that was a final battle to bring in the Mashiach, even though it didn't turn out that way. For the discussion on almost Mashiachs and how they don't always work out, listen to my lesson on Psalm 46. However, the term Benot may not mean literally the daughters of Judah, but metaphorically the cities that surround Jerusalem. And there's a modest philological connection between the Benot daughters and Banot built places. In fact, in the Song of Songs, Benot Yushalayim, the daughters, so to speak, of Jerusalem, are understood by many ancient and medieval biblical commentators to mean the city of foreign nations. So it doesn't pay to get too geographically limited, as Sarna does, to say that because it's referring to Benot Yehuda, it must be talking about a serious march on Judah, which was the only surviving part of the Israel nation at the time. And it doesn't really pay to get historically limited merely because of this Benot Yehuda reference. Either way, someone is making very merry over the beauty of and the salvation in Jerusalem. And now the psalmist commands us, in confidence that we will survive this war, or in praise that we have already done so, Sobu Tzion v'hakifuha sifru migdaleha, circle around Zion and surround it, and count its towers. Shitu li bechem lechela, pasagu armenoteha lema'an tisaparu ledor acharon. Pay attention to its walls, raise up your eyes to its citadels, in order that you will tell about it to the next, or perhaps to the next, and the next, and the next, all the way through to the final generation. And again, I believe that this is the confidence that the author is trying to bring before when war is upon them, to have them go through the city, count the towers, make sure that everything is okay, and then to recognize that God's beauty is in it and that it will last forever. Ki ze Elohim Eloheinu olam va'ed hu yinahagenu al mut. Because this, the through Jerusalem's beauty, which gives us some sense of his, of God's awesome nature and presence, this God, ki ze Elohim, our God forever, Eloheinu olam va'ed, he will lead us all forever and ever, hu yinahagenu al mut. In Psalm 47, the nations are called upon to accept God as king. There, it is said that the nations will be led, yinaheg, beneath us. But here, it uses the same verb to say that we will all be led together to a recognition that God is everyone's God. And there we were told that God, that the kings of the other nations are supposed to say our God as well, so that it's both our God and your God. And perhaps here too, we have finally gotten to the post-war and messianic sentence that the God is all of our gods, and he will lead all of us, both Jew and Gentile, forever and ever. Finally, a grammatical note, almut is sometimes written in two words, meaning until death. But I think the more reliable and fitting reading is one word, almut, which is a long form of olam. Olam and almut, meaning forever and ever and ever. Also, you may have noticed that this psalm was the one that was sung on Mondays by the Levites in the temple. And it is still said on Mondays, at the end of morning prayers and traditional services. Once again, Psalms, being inspired and holy, hold true for the past. They speak of the messianic future, and they are quite strongly functional in the present, no matter what present you happen to find yourself in.